Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Management and Rehabilitation of Advanced MS conference call. Your host, Amber Stalker, will now begin.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Amber Stalker. I am with the Greater New England Chapter of the National MS Society, and I want to thank you for registering for Management and Rehabilitation of Advanced MS. Our agenda tonight will begin with our featured presentation with Dr. George Kraft, which will be followed by a question and answer session, so you will have time to ask some questions. At the end of the call, please stay on the line to answer a few short questions that are meant to help us serve you better. I'd like to get started immediately and introduce Dr. George Kraft. As a native of Ohio, Dr. Kraft received his degrees from Harvard and Ohio State University. He interned at the University of California Hospital in San Francisco, where he did his residency in physical medicine and rehab there, and as well as at Ohio State University. For several decades, through 2011, he was the director of the Western MS Center, Electrodiagnostic Medicine, and co-director of the Muscular Dystrophy Clinic at the University of Washington, where he was Alvord Professor of MS Research, Professor of Rehabilitation Medicine, and Adjunct Professor of Neurology. Currently, he is Alvord Professor of New MS Research, Emeritus Professor of Rehabilitation Medicine and Neurology. Dr. Kraft's interests are in the areas of MS, neurological rehabilitation, and electrodiagnosis. He is a well-known expert in the field of MS and serves on the advisory board of the NIH and the Medical Advisory Board of the National MS Society and the Advisory Board of the Kessler Research Institute of the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey. In addition, he continues as principal investigator of the MS Rehabilitation Research and Training Center at the University of Washington. He has received the Distinguished Researcher and Lifetime Achievement Awards from the American Association of Neuromuscular and Electrodiagnostic Medicine and the Distinguished Academician Award from the American Academy of Physicians. Dr. Kraft served his country during the Vietnam War as Lieutenant Commander in the U.S. Navy. He also served the Department of Veterans Affairs as a member of the Special Advisory Committee to the Veterans Health Administration on Multiple Sclerosis Centers of Excellence. Among Dr. Kraft's research achievements are the first description of fatigue as a symptom of MS, now recognized as the most common symptom, and the first stem cell transplant treatment for MS in the U.S., as well as many other research projects devoted to improving the care of people with MS. He has co-authored the books The MS Workbook, Living Fully with Multiple Sclerosis, and Living with MS, A Wellness Approach. Recently in 2010, Dr. Kraft hosted a TV series, MS from A to Z, which was broadcast on University of Washington TV. In 2011, he received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the National MS Society. Dr. Kraft?
Amber, thank you very much for that very long introduction. I hope we have time for a discussion here and listening to all the good questions from the audience. So, audience, hello. I know I can't hear you say hello back, but I hope I will be able to keep you awake. Well, the topic tonight is advanced MS, or as it has been phrased, progressive MS. And as you know, we now speak of MS more specifically than just she has MS. We talk about the types of MS. And let me start off by telling you the current concepts about how we approach the different types of MS. Relapsing remitting MS, or MS that has flares and remissions, is the way most MS starts. 85% of MS starts like that. However, about 15% of MS starts slow and just the symptoms build. And that is a progressive, primary progressive type of MS. Now, in the first type I mentioned, the 85% group that starts with relapses and remissions, over a period of time, maybe 15 years, maybe 18 years, maybe 20 years, MS may tend to just start progressing. And the worsening periods, the relapses, seem to be diminished and maybe less severe. And what starts out as a very up-and-down disease seems to evolve into a steadily progressive or a slowly progressive disease at the end. So when we talk about progressive MS, we can really speak about primary progressive MS throughout the entire period that it exists, and also the later stages of what starts out as relapsing and remitting MS. So I'm not going to talk about relapsing remitting MS. That is a huge topic, and I'm sure you will have heard of or will be hearing talks on that as well. The relapsing remitting MS is the form of MS that has been studied mostly with regard to different drug treatments. So I'm not going to talk about drug treatments from the standpoint of relapses and remissions, other than maybe to say that they have been very effective and there are a number of new drugs coming on the market and on the market already that can reduce the relapses and shorten the period of relapse and help the overall course of MS. Now, when it comes to progressive MS, there's really been less benefit in the field of drug treatment. You heard from Amber that my patients were the first ones in North America that had stem cell transplants for MS, and we did the first study of the first patients starting in 1998. And we, at that time, took all comers because it was a brand new way of treatment and because it had some degree of risk attached to it. We naturally took into the group any patient who really wanted to be treated this way and who was not able to be treated with standard medicines. Well, for a period of years, a few years at the beginning, we had some degree of optimism that the stem cell transplant was actually helpful to patients with progressive stages of the disease. But subsequently, we've done more research and we've looked at the data more carefully. And unfortunately, like all the other treatments that we have for MS, we found out that that was a statistical quirk. It was not real. And we do not feel that stem cell transplants have any role whatsoever in progressive MS. You also may know that several drugs have been tried for progressive forms of MS. Perhaps you know that Copaxone was studied in progressive MS a number of years ago, and that was not effective, and the treatment trial was shut down really ahead of schedule because it just wasn't going anyplace. And you may also know that rituximab or Rituxan, it's a monoclonal antibody, was tried a few years ago. And likewise, that was not shown to be effective. So really, we don't have at the present time any specific medications that we can use for progressive MS. But the good news, I think, is that we do have treatments. We have treatments for progressive MS. And the treatments that we can use are predominantly rehabilitative treatments. And I think we can look at that in two ways. We can look at the treatment, the rehabilitative treatment that can be used to prevent problems that invariably would occur if left untreated. For example, if you have a patient, if a person has bad spasticity, we know that the joint may get tight over time, and there are ways to prevent that from occurring by treating the spasticity and treating the joint range. So there are sort of preventive rehabilitation treatments such as that, and then there are restorative rehabilitation treatments. And again, an example would be someone who has a tight ankle or something, some joint was tight because of spasticity. We know ways to, quote, stretch out that tightness to make the patient better. So I would much prefer that patients who do have progressive MS be aware of what is happening in their bodies and be aware that there are these preventative rehabilitation treatments that should be implemented right away to prevent what would be known to be a complication from developing. I think that's just good common sense, and that's good medicine. So I also want to comment that if there is progression of MS, there is often weakness, there is often spasticity. And typically, where does this occur most in most people? Well, it occurs at the ankles, in the lower part of the leg. And many of you listening may have problems with spasticity or with weakness of your ankles. Why, you might ask, is this the area where MS occurs? And why is it in this area these complications of MS occur, I should say? And the reason is, think of your nervous system. That MS, remember, is a disease of the central nervous system. It occurs in the brain, but it also occurs in the spinal cord. And recall that when you want to make a movement with a muscle, that movement is started and generated in the brain, and then the impulse goes down the spinal cord, down the nerve in the limb, and out to the muscle. And the longest pathway in the body is what? It's from the brain to the foot. It's the longest pathway. And therefore, if there's any MS in the body, the odds are higher that it's going to affect some of those pathways than it would a shorter pathway. It's just a matter of odds. So it's very common in all people who have progressive forms of MS that at some point in time, they will have problems with their ankles and feet. And often these start out with weakness of the ability to bring the foot up. Or maybe the foot comes up in the doctor's office, but after a person is walking for one or two or three or five or 10 blocks, it may be really hard to bring that toe up. And you might catch the toe and fall. So weakness of movement of the toe in that direction, we call that dorsiflexion. And dorsiflexion, weakness of the toe and ankle, is probably one of the early findings that we see in the progressive form of MS. And accompanying that is also spasticity. Now, spasticity, I don't mean spasms. Spasms are technically like cramps. Those are those painful contractions that are involuntary of muscle that are very painful. No, I'm talking about spasticity. I'm talking about the tendency for the ankle, for example, to point the toe down under certain circumstances. It's not something that the patient is doing. It's something that the nervous system is doing. It's the reflexes are making that toe point down. Well, if you have weakness of bringing the toe up and you have the reflexes pushing the toe down, that's a pretty terrible situation. It's very easy to see how people could catch their toe and fall. So an early thing that we need to always worry about in MS is problems in tripping and falling and problems in control and strength of the ankle. So the first thing I would do, and I would recommend those of you who may have this problem discuss with your treating provider, would be to do something to reduce that spasticity or that reflex pattern that wants to point the toe down. And there are, in general, two commonly used ways to approach that. The first is to try some oral medication. Probably the most common one used is a drug called baclofen. I'll bet 50% or more of the people with MS have been, it's one time or another, maybe currently on baclofen. Baclofen reduces the jerkiness or the spasticity that can cause that toe to point down. And remember, I also mentioned there's weakness there. So maybe what you want to do once you get the control of the spasticity taken care of, maybe you want to see a therapist and work on a stretching program to the heel cord and an exercise program to build up the strength of the muscles that bring the toe up. I mentioned there were two things that could be done for the spasticity they commonly used. And the one I said was the oral medication, such as baclofen. And a second one, and more frequently used, is a needle insertion of some medicine, some injection of some medicine into the muscle that's spastic, that's causing spasticity. And this medicine could be a chemical that blocks the function of the nerve, or much more frequently used now is Botox. And Botox isn't used just for wrinkles in the face. It can now be used for controlling spasticity at the ankles. It's very effective. And when these are maximally utilized, and indeed when the spasticity and the tendency to push down and the weakness is treated as much as possible, there still may be lack of enough strength to bring that toe up when you're walking long distances. Maybe then is when the person should try a brace. And there are various types of braces. Some of the new braces we have are very cosmetically acceptable. A man could wear it under a pair of pants and the brace goes in the shoe and nobody would notice. And a woman could wear it and it would be hardly noticed because it's made of plastic and has a color of the skin. So it's really not that noticeable. And those braces, in addition, have the additional benefit of giving the ankle some stability. So that even if you can bring your toe up and don't have the spasticity, you still might, if you walk very far, you might step on a pebble or something and twist your ankle. But wearing a brace like this would really prevent twisting of the ankle. I mentioned that MS is in the central nervous system, which is the brain and the spinal cord, and that the problems we see start generally in most people, but not all, of course, but in most people down at the ankle, and then we see them coming closer and closer to the face, to the brain, because lesions can occur in the spinal cord and also in the brain and brainstem. We also, as the disease progresses, might see similar patterns of weakness, maybe weakness in bringing the leg forward or straightening the leg out, or maybe spasticity at the knee, so that the person can not fully straighten that leg out, and the leg maybe is within 10 or 15 degrees of full knee extension because of spasticity. Well, the same oral medication and the same type of injection might be used to treat that as well. And of course, problems can occur in the arms and hands as people have had MS for a long period of time, as it has become more chronic and moved into the progressive form. And similar treatments can be used there as well. I also want to comment on something that I call the hidden disabilities of MS. And I know that I'll bet at least half of you out there listening, I'll bet about half of you at least have a dog or a cat, or maybe more than one dog and cat. Think about what the doctors, you know, when you see your doctor, often the doctor will see you walk into the office and say, "How are you doing?" And you'll probably say, "Fine." And the doctor may say, "Have you had any exacerbations or flares?" You may say, "No." And the doctor may think, "Well, you're doing fine." But I want to tell you that that's not necessarily how I look at MS, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. And I want you to think of the dog or the cat, and think of your brain, and your brain is about 10 times larger than your dog's brain or your cat's brain. But the dog has better vision. The dog or cat have better sense of hearing, better sense of smell, better sense of taste, stronger muscles given the size of the body, and probably even better bladder control. So all the things that we think about as being related to a flare or worsening of MS, which is typically vision or strength or sensation or bladder function, all of these things are really probably not where we should look for the problems of MS, because these pathways that I just mentioned are present even more robust form in small animals with smaller brains. So it's in the rest of the brain that we should be aware that problems can occur. And what do problems of MS in that other part of the brain produce? What kind of symptoms? Well, honestly, they produce problems with memory, because much of what the brain does is it allows you to have a very sharp and a good memory. It also is associated with emotional stability. And we know that people with MS have at least 3 times more depression than people without MS have. What else does this part of the brain do? It helps people with thinking, their cognition. And we know that people with MS, even early stages, can have problems with thinking and cognitive problems. And also, it can help mediate such things as body pain. So patients with MS have more pain. And then lastly, and this is something that I've been following since we first reported this in the early 1980s that Amber mentioned, is fatigue. And I know that there are many of you listening to me who understand what this MS fatigue is like. And, you know, it's not something like people without MS have. I think it's very difficult for someone without MS to understand the degree of strength-sapping essence that this fatigue can sap out of a person with MS. It can just really just make things so, so difficult for you to function. So if you combine all of these problems, fatigue and pain, cognitive impairment, memory problems, depression, all of these things together, it becomes more challenging to really function in life. And it becomes more challenging to function as many people have to function, which is they have kids at home, and typically women are the major gender that has MS, so they have a home to take care of. They've got cooking and shopping. As I said, they've got some kids at home frequently, and often they've got a job. So to keep the job together with the family, the stresses, the work, with all the fatigue and depression and cognitive impairment and pain, all of you who have MS are my heroes. I've felt this way for a long time, and the more I look into MS, the more I honestly feel that people with MS are my heroes. But what toll can it take? Well, it can take a terrible toll on families in some cases. And it can really take a horrendous toll on jobs. It's very, very difficult for people with MS to function at a high level in our highly competitive job market. And, you know, now there are, 8% or so unemployed throughout the country. In some regions, it's larger than that. And holding competitive work is very, very difficult in many cases. And it's a very, very big challenge for many patients with MS to hold down jobs. And I know that because we have a very active program working with patients with MS on their vocation. They simply can't hold these jobs down. And so in people like this, I would say at some point you need to get to a facility that understands this issue and understands why it is just really not possible to continue in active, competitive employment, and it may be time for a medical disability retirement. So I'm going to sort of stop there. I think I've given, Amber, I think I've given a sort of a good overview of some of the more minor and really some of the major problems in MS, and I would hope that we can get some dialogue going on here with the people who've listened in. Amber?
All right, yep, I'm right here.
Okay.
I think that's a great idea. Jeremy, can we open the virtual floor up for questions?
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the 1 key on your phone. Again, to ask a question, press the 1 key on your phone. First question is from Arlene. Arlene, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Kraft. Your seminar is very interesting. My only question is this. Is there anybody working on the fact that it is wonderful to go to for rehab, for stretching, but I'm on Medicare and a supplemental, and they fight you tooth and nail to be able to go to this kind of help. And that, I think, is the biggest problem for people with MS.
I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. And it's a huge problem, Arlene, and I really appreciate your bringing that up. That was a whole area that I hadn't talked about, but it's really important because if you with MS don't have access to what you need, then it might as well not be available, right? So you have to have access, and because many people with MS, as I mentioned, have a harder time in their jobs, they have taken earlier medical retirements, and they're on Medicare. And so Medicare is the insurance they have to work with. So here's what I would suggest. Work with your local chapter of the National MS Society. I have great respect for the National MS Society, and they have people in Washington, D.C., who work with Medicare and can be advocates for individual special cases of that special people have or individual people have, but also more importantly to be sure that the legislation and the law is written to help and include people with MS. But it can be a real challenge. Also, don't forget that you have a congressman that you can write, or other advocates that are available for you, and it's not something you can take on entirely yourself. It requires a team effort, and Amber, isn't it true that the MS Society has a lot of resources for people to help out?
We definitely do. All chapters have some form of financial assistance, so you definitely want to call your chapter and find out what their financial assistance program covers. In addition, some chapters may also have some financial assistance for exercise programs, which could include, you know, going to a physical therapist if you, you know, really were not being able to have it covered. And we also have resources for professionals to help them write letters that may encourage your insurance company to cover certain services. So definitely call your chapter.
Thank you for that question. It was good. Next question, maybe?
Okay, the next question is from Phil. Phil, please go ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic, thank you. I was just wondering if you had any opinions on electrical stimulation for building muscles.
Electrostimulation for building muscles. Oh, I would say that's a pretty shocking statement. But I don't know if you see the New York Times, but a few days ago, maybe a week ago, there was an article on how to reduce your stomach, and there's places in Manhattan apparently where spas where people go on, they get these electrodes on their stomachs to help trim their stomachs. Well, there's been research on this. And the research, here's what the research has shown. I've actually done some research on this. Here's what it shows, that if you just lie there and put on these pads to make your muscles stronger, they don't particularly get stronger, okay? But if you try to strengthen the muscle, if you try to contract the muscle at the same time the muscle is being stimulated, you can build up muscle faster that way. So they are helpful if you put them on a muscle and you simultaneously build up resistance in that muscle, either isometrically or with a weight. Yes, they can be useful, but you don't just lie there and let it shock you and make you stronger. It doesn't work that way.
Okay, the next question is from Andrea. Andrea, please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Yes, thank you, Dr. Kraft. I don't have so much of a question, but I just wanted to comment about all of your statements, basically. My doctor still can't figure out really what form of MS I have, because I've been suffering for probably about 35 years since I had mononucleosis at the age of 14. And I found out on my own about 3 years ago that there's a correlation between the virus mononucleosis and the triggering of MS. Apparently, about 90% MS patients have had mononucleosis, and so they think that there is a link between the triggering of MS from the mononucleosis virus. So I've suffered from chronic fatigue from the time I was 14, and then as the years went on, there was all kinds of stuff going on in my body I didn't understand. And I was getting no help from doctors. You know, they kept telling me, oh, it's just depression, get a boyfriend, do some exercise, these kinds of things. And it wasn't until I went to the hospital for joint diseases and was seen by Dr. Kirill Kaprowski, who's the head of neurology over there, that I finally found somebody that took me seriously and started looking into things. So I've been suffering for many, many years and just got diagnosed basically last year. So the fatigue part, losing jobs, I lost more jobs in my lifetime, and I'm almost 50. I'll be 50 in October, so it's a big birthday. I lost my last job because I got too sick to work. I thought I was going crazy because I couldn't focus, because I couldn't remember things, because I just was incapable of learning in the same way that I'd learned all my life. I mean, I was always very quick, very sharp. I could go to a job.
And Andrea, thanks. I mean, it's a good question, but I want to comment if I can.
Yes, please.
I think that you understood what I was saying when I said MS does a lot more things than just looking at, you know, our vision and strength and so forth. It does all these other things. And science would indicate that the Epstein-Barr virus, the EB virus, which causes mono, in many cases can cause MS, but not all cases. So MS is probably associated with a variety of different viruses. EB is probably one of them. But I'm really, really glad that you got to some place where they were able to identify what you had and help you. And that's what people with MS need to do. You need to be really assertive, take charge of your own health, and get yourself to a good center who understands MS. Okay? Next question.
Okay, the next question is from Gerald. Gerald, please go ahead.
Yes, Doctor. Thank you for the information you're giving us. I was diagnosed 40 years ago. This coming fall, I'm now 75. And at that time, they didn't use the terms relapsing, remitting, progressive, and all that, at least my neurologist, the two that I saw. And both of them at the time thought I'd be in a wheelchair within 2 to 3 years, and I told them both, I said, it's going to take more than MS to put me there. And it turned out I have relapsing, remitting. And when I have these attacks, very often my left side is affected the most, and I get these terrific pain in my on the sciatic nerve, my left leg, which I take gabapentin for, which has been very helpful. But 3 years ago, when I started taking it, I never had it for such a long period of time.
We started taking the gabapentin, you mean?
Yeah, I started taking that 3 years ago last month.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, it lasts a couple months when I get this, and then the pain will go away, and sometimes the numbness went away. And but I've been taking it ever since because I can feel a certain amount of level of pain there all the time. And I'm wondering if after all these years have gone by, could I possibly be going into what they now call secondary progressive?
Oh, I think it's overwhelmingly likely, if not guaranteed, that you are going into that or have been into that for some period of time. Yeah, it's very unusual to not go into it for this long period of time. So I suspect you're there. Next question.
Okay, the next question is from Priscilla. Priscilla, please go ahead.
Yes, good evening, Doctor. Thank you so much for this presentation. It's one of the most insightful ones I've had in my 4 years since my diagnosis. My question is regarding baclofen. I have been very loath to take that because of a lot of the side effects, but the way you described it, it sounds like something that, in point of fact, I might reconsider. Can you offer me any kind of encouragement or some things to help me allay my fears?
Yes, I would be happy to, because I think that I am absolutely right in sort of urging people to try it. Here is the problem. Many people who When baclofen is initially prescribed for a patient with MS by a provider, sometimes the provider is not very familiar with how the person with MS responds to baclofen. And what baclofen is, it's a very, very good drug. It's very safe. It's extremely effective. But it needs to be started at very, 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 very low doses and very, very slowly increased, because some people have very bad reactions to it initially. And it sounds like you may have tried on too high a dose and really felt you couldn't tolerate it. But I would be quite, quite sure that if you were started on a much lower dose and very gradually increased the dose, you would be able to tolerate it just fine, and you would find that it really helped you a lot. Okay?
Okay, the next question is from Arlene. Arlene, please go ahead.
Arlene's not there.
No. You know what, Dr. Kraft, we have some questions that were submitted earlier. Would it be okay if we went through a couple of those?
That would be a good idea, I think, yes.
Okay. So I have the first question is, how is a gait transfer belt used effectively?
A gait transfer belt, let me explain what a gait transfer belt is. A gait transfer belt is a fabric belt that is very strong. Oh, it would probably hold 1,000 pounds or something. It's very, very strong, and it has a buckle on the end that is a little different than seat belts, but it's got teeth in it. So you can make this belt into a loop of varying sizes. And a gait transfer belt is put around the waist of someone who has MS, and then the therapist or maybe the person who is going to walk with that person or the person who is going to help transfer that patient can grab firmly onto that gait transfer belt and help the patient stand up. And more important, if the patient starts to fall, they can grab that belt and hold on to the patient to keep them from falling. So a gait transfer belt is just like a belt, except it's much, much stronger, and it's used in those ways.
Dr. Kraft, are you saying that it's used by professionals, say a physical therapist, but could also be used, but someone, you know, a caregiver, a family caregiver, could also use it at home?
Yes, I'm saying that the therapist would show the caregiver how to use it, and the way it would be used would be to put around the waist as a handle, to help, to assist the person from walking and transferring and not falling, yes.
Okay.
I also want to comment on the gait transfer. Do I have time to comment? You think?
Absolutely.
Okay. I want to comment on something that we've recently discovered here and found extremely useful. And I'll bet you it's not on the East Coast yet. By the way, Amber didn't mention, but I'm in Seattle, Washington. And that is, I will tell a patient, I talked earlier about people who get this tightness, this contracture of an ankle, and this usually is a result of spasticity. And I tell a patient like this to get two TWO transfer belts, and I know you can get them on Amazon.com for about $8 a piece. You can get them in different colors. So get two of them. And rather than make a large loop with one belt, you put one belt, attach it to the next, and then you make an even larger loop, okay? If you can picture a very large loop made with two of these belts. And you put part of that, you put the foot into that loop, and you put the rest of the loop behind the back. And you sit down on a firm surface, and your leg is out straight, and you lean back, and when you lean back, you put pressure on that belt, and you put pressure on that ankle, and you can help stretch out an ankle tightness contracture. And it's extremely effective, very easy to do, can be done for 20 to 30 minutes at a time, which is what you need to do for to make it effective. And it can really improve the range of motion in that ankle.
Excellent. Excellent. Second question. Could you tell us anything about the drug BG12 and when it may be approved?
BG12, you know, it'll never get approved until it gets a name, right?
Right.
That's a silly name, but that's how it's known. It doesn't have the other name on it yet. I mentioned earlier that all the medications that we have that are effective are for relapsing remitting MS, and what they do is they reduce the frequency of getting a relapse and they shorten the relapse generally. That's what they do. BG12 is simply the same type of drug. It works on relapsing remitting MS, And it is a drug that is currently being researched. It looks very promising. It's being made by Biogen out of close to, I think, Cambridge, Massachusetts. And
yeah.
It should be a good drug when it comes out. It's an oral medication, but it's not out yet.
Okay. I have another question.
Okay.
This comes from anonymously. So a person with MS who is proactive, positive thinking, dedicated to daily exercise, and careful to eat only nutritious, non-processed foods. Her MS has recently become secondary progressive. It seems the effects of the drugs prescribed are as discouraging as the disease itself. She's running out of ideas. Are there any holistic methods by which anyone has found success? And I think she may be asking about complementary, non-medical.
Holistic, yeah, I think so, yeah. So let me just to go back and comment about the disease that she has described. So I assume that she initially started out having relapsing remitting disease. I assume that since she's talking about recently become secondary progressive. So she had the type of disease that normally the medications would help. And it may well be that it sounds as if they were not helping a lot. And it may be that the right medication was not tried, or it may be that she was not tried on medications. I just don't know. In the secondary progressive stage, it's okay for one to think in terms of holistic medicine or more alternative approaches, because there are no approved medications that are effective in the standard repertoire of medicines. One thing that some patients are interested in trying, at least in the West Coast, is low-dose naltrexone. Naltrexone is, by low dose, I mean very low dose. It's usually around 3, 4, or 5 milligrams. It's an oral medication. And by the way, Amber, I need to stress that I do not have a Massachusetts license. I do not have a New York license or a Pennsylvania license, and I'm not practicing medicine, right? This is not a recommendation.
Exactly.
Yeah. But the other thing that what would be good is I think you probably in your library, Amber, in Boston, have the book on alternative medicine out of Denver,
Alan Bowling.
Yes, Alan Bowling's
mm-hmm.
Book. I think that's very good. And he also has a website where he keeps up on the latest changes in alternative medication. But I think that the questioner should try to go to sources that are reputable. Dr. Bowling is reputable. He has his PhD in pharmacology as well as being a physician, so he
mm-hmm.
is quite knowledgeable. And I would recommend that would be a way to approach it.
And most chapters have a lending library.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This book can be borrowed from.
Yes.
There probably are a couple of others as well that the society has within their lending library.
Yes.
In addition to there are publications that the society has put out, as there has been some research done on complementary therapies for people with MS. So I would definitely call your chapter if you're having a hard time finding the Alan Bowling. And I'm sorry off the top of my head, I can't remember what it's called.
I think it's called complementary
and alternative,
yeah.
Yes.
and I would also say, you mentioned also our MS from A to Z, the TV series. Actually, it's up on YouTube. I mean, these are up on YouTube. And I know I've seen several of them, of our programs that are still on YouTube. Dr. Bowling was one of my guests, and we did a program on this. And I would suggest you might put his name and my name into YouTube and try to come up with something. The other thing I think, I really need to have a caution here, because the caution is that there is a lot of non-scientifically proven crazy stuff out there. And I know I've seen some of it. If you just put something in and Google it, there are some things there that are just really quite quite crazy. So I would really advise someone to not just go and not Google. Just because something's on the web doesn't mean it's reliable. You need to either look for a reliable website, as we've mentioned, or consult with your MS Society. Would you agree, Amber?
Absolutely. Your MS Society will also field calls, you know, if you call and ask them about things that you've heard of, and can really be a good resource to direct you in the way of complementary and alternative therapies that have shown success, mm-hmm. as opposed to just being out there. A lot of them are out there and they cure everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
you also
right.
want to be, we always tell people to be aware of that kind of claim.
And the dangerous thing is I've seen them advertise stuff that's very expensive and they're probably, you know, it may be dangerous in their
mm-hmm.
self too.
Exactly. They're not, the FDA does not have any control over these kinds of things. So
that's exactly a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I do have one more question. that was previously submitted. And this is from someone who has heard that people have negative side effects from Empira.
Mm-hmm.
I had digestive problems and a friend suddenly developed high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of any negative side effects to Empira?
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because that's a medication that I mentioned that none of the disease-modifying treatments are really working, were not effective or approved in the progressive forms of MS. However, Empira is. Empira is the one medication that, I should use a generic term, it's dalfampridine, but it's only made by one company, and that's Empira. And that is... been approved by the FDA for primary progressive MS as well as secondary progressive MS. And Empira can do a lot of things. It has only been studied and approved for improving gait. But I will tell you, I had a patient who was in secondary progressive MS, and I put him on Empira. And not only was he able to walk farther, he was a woodsman, and he could go out and walk further, you know, miles into the woods. And he had a boat, and his balance was better. And I've seen it improve patients in lots of ways. But it's only FDA approved, and I guess I should only speak in what's FDA approved. But it was only FDA approved to improve walking. But walking that's impaired, well, first of all, let me comment. If a person with secondary progressive or primary progressive MS has impaired walking, the first thing to do is what I started out by saying, checking to see if there's any spasticity or jumpiness of muscle that needs to be treated with baclofen or things like Botox, and also look to see if there's any tightness of a joint and there's any contracture of a joint that needs to be treated by stretching or by other means, as I mentioned. And then once that is done, look to see whether any strengthening of the muscles to bring the foot up could be helpful. And that would be the third thing you'd do. But what you might want to do once you get those things taken care of is try Empira. Now, Empira, if it was tried before you took care of the spasticity or before you took care of the contracture, it might just complicate things. But once you have those things, once you have the mechanical aspects taken care of, it can improve the function, the neurologic function, in a impaired limb. The question was about blood pressure or other negative side effects. Yes, I have had patients who have had negative side effects. And think of Empira as something that improves the conduction in nerves. And you know that MS is a disease that is demyelinating and causes the nerves to diminish in their capacity for nerve conduction. And so Empira then can improve nerve conduction. Well, that might also mean that if there's a little bit of pain, maybe Empira could improve the conduction to the point where the pain is more meaningful or worse. That's possible. And blood pressure is also mediated by lots of things, including nerve function, and maybe it could alter blood pressure. It certainly is a potent medication. I mean, it's not terribly scary strong, but it's a medication that can do many things. But under the correct medical care, it could be tried and it might help somebody improve their walking.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I know that we have only a few more minutes left for questions. So, Jeremy, I'd like to give our audience one more chance to ask any questions that they might have.
Okay. Well, there is a question in queue from Jeanette. Jeanette, please go ahead.
Good evening, Dr. Kraft. Thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you.
I have a question regarding Novitron. Is that still being used, and is that helpful with progressive MS?
Novantrone, we call it. Okay. Novantrone, but I know what you mean. Novantrone, in many ways, has gotten a very bad reputation, I think. Novantrone is still available. It's now generic. It is a very powerful medication, and it has to be given by people who understand how to give it. If you put my name in, whether you have this in your library, Amber, but I have a recent paper out on about 100 cases of patients, challenging cases that we've used by treating with Novantrone. I think it might be a useful paper for at least to have in a library that maybe people could read. But anyway,
I do not believe that we have that in our library.
It's on PubMed. I'm not sure who can get PubMed, but I know put my name in and put in Novantrone. Anyway, bottom line is, the big problem with Novantrone and the problem with many medications is how they are given and if they're given by people who are not terribly familiar with them. But we gave Novantrone very carefully, and we did not give it automatically every 3 months. We varied the interval depending upon what the blood count showed. We varied the dose depending on what the blood count showed, and we varied how we gave it depending on what the blood count showed. So if it's given properly, and frequently that means lower dose than what the label would say, it can be very effective and quite safe. Now, that being said, it is a form of chemotherapy, and it is potent, and it can be potentially quite dangerous. But if it's given carefully, it can be a great benefit, I think.
Excellent. Jeremy, are there any more questions?
There's a question from Jonathan. Jonathan, please go ahead.
Okay, I think that's me. I just went into John. You mentioned Novantrone. I'm looking for something, so I've been taking Imuran for 20-some years. I was diagnosed in 87. I self-diagnosed myself with secondary progressive back in, like, 93. Cleveland Clinic disagreed with me, but my new medical team took an MRI, told me it was consistent with 15 years of secondary progressive. I thank my doctor for validating me. But I just want to say for me that there are so many things so much worse than MS. I live with it. I'm not a victim. It's my major challenge every day, but I'm alive.
That's a good philosophy, and I want to comment that Imuran is also a chemotherapy, just like Novantrone, just like it's one of those family of drugs that can be quite effective, but have to be given very, very carefully. Yes, it's very important, and I agree with you. It's very important to take charge and to be a bit assertive, to be sure that you're getting the best care available to you, the best care in your region. And that don't hesitate to ask questions, because who knows more about your body than you, the patient, do? I would say that I salute you. And as I said earlier, you know, people with MS are my heroes, because I know, I probably don't fully know, probably nobody knows, but I have a somewhat of a good sense about the problems you people are going through. So you are my heroes.
Okay. Dr. Kraft, do you feel like you can take one more question if we have someone on the phone?
Oh, yes.
On the line?
Oh, yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. Jeremy, is there anyone on the line with a question?
Yes, ma'am. There's a question from Carol Lynn. Carol Lynn, please go ahead.
Yes. In 2008, I was diagnosed with primary progressive MS. And as far as I know with the other types of MS, there was either an injectable drug or a pill of some kind. And it seems as though primary progressive has taken the place of bottom rung of the ladder. And I wonder why it's so difficult to find a medication for this type of MS. You mentioned Ampira. I took that once. It did nothing for me.
Yes. Well, as I said earlier, of the types of MS, there is no medication that's been approved nor shown to be effective in primary progressive MS. And the situation, I didn't go into too many details because it's only an hour-long program, but the reason is that, pathologically speaking, we now believe there are at least four different types of MS pathologically, and each of these can express itself in two different clinical patterns. So it's a very complex array of diseases that all get lumped together as MS. So as a good friend of mine said, MS is a plural term. MS is plural. It isn't MS, it's the MSs, and that's how we should think about it. So primary progressive MS is a degenerative disease. It's not an inflammatory disease. All the other types of MS appear to be demyelinating and inflammatory. And all the medicines we have are for anti-inflammation, for the inflammatory characteristics of MS. So that's why they don't work for a degenerative disease. Also, it looks as if some of the types of primary progressive MS may be much more of a genetically predetermined type of degeneration, and things that are genetically determined they just simply don't respond to medications, as do those things that are caused by environmental contact or other causes. So for all those reasons, progressive MS, primary progressive MS, is a really, really different type of disorder. And with regard to Ampira, Ampira has been approved for all types of MS, but, and I say but, Ampira does not work in every patient. It works in only so-called responders. And in my experience, more responders tended to be the relapsing forms of MS, not the degenerative forms, although it may work in some people with primary progressive MS. So I'm very sorry that Ampira did not help, but it doesn't help by any means in all the people with primary progressive MS. However, it is the one drug that may help in some people with primary progressive MS.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Kraft. I'd like to thank you for being so generous with your time and expertise. I think we can all agree this has been a very illuminating hour. It certainly has for me, and I've been with the MS Society for over 13 years. I know that you have to go and open up a new MS center
in your area.
Absolutely, I do.
And I want to thank you again. For everybody else on the call, I'd really like you to stay on. We have a short 5-question survey that really is meant to help us understand how you like the teleconferences that we've had, and also to get your suggestions for other programming. So thank you very much. And Jeremy, I think you can start the survey. And Dr. Kraft, thank you.
I'm going to hang up now. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
This now begins our polling session. For our first question, as a result of participating in the call Management and Rehabilitation of Advanced MS, I can name at least one new fact I learned about rehabilitation and MS. Press 1 to agree, 2 to disagree, or 3 for no opinion. As a result of participating in the call Management and Rehabilitation of Advanced MS, I can name at least one new fact I learned about rehabilitation and MS. 1 for agree, 2 for disagree, or 3 for no opinion. Polling is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. For our next question, I can name at least one new strategy to manage my MS. Press 1 to agree, 2 to disagree, or 3 for no opinion. I can name at least one new strategy to manage my MS. 1 to agree, 2 to disagree, or 3 for no opinion. Polling is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. For our next question, I will use at least one new strategy I learned to manage my MS within the next 3 months. Press 1 to agree, 2 to disagree, or 3 for no opinion. I will use at least one new strategy I learned to manage my MS within the next 3 months. 1 to agree, 2 to disagree, or 3 for no opinion. Polling is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. For our next question, I feel the speaker was very knowledgeable on the topic of rehabilitation and MS. 1 to agree, 2 to disagree, or 3 for no opinion. I feel the speaker was very knowledgeable on the topic of rehabilitation and MS. 1 to agree, 2 to disagree, or 3 for no opinion. Polling is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare for your next question. For your last question, I enjoy learning through a teleconference format. 1 to agree, 2 to disagree, or 3 for no opinion. I enjoy learning through a teleconference format. 1 to agree, 2 to disagree, or 3 for no opinion. This concludes our polling session. Thank you for your participation. You may all disconnect.